Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
The celebration is on. It's still theirs until someone rips it out of their hands.
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour podcast alongside Chris Rosenthal. I'm Kevin Brown for Inside Lacrosse. And Rosie, we got a packed show this week. Boston Homecoming Part 2, Año Dos, second year. And we've got a packed show to unpack for you guys. It's playoff scenarios on the line. Three teams have clinched their spots in the 16 field. Of course, East and West playoffs this year. Three spots up for grabs. The two title contenders are on the outside looking in with their backs against the wall. The individual player award races are heating up for one last regular season. A week to decide things there. And Rosie, we've got a 5-minute non-releasable victory lap coming your way. Boomer is back.
How about that? Dreams do come true, kids. Don't give up. Any dream you think might just end up coming true. I wanted to see a mascot, and a couple days later, news is out. We are seeing ourselves a mascot. Boomer is back. Welcome back, Boomer.
Now, I do not have physical proof of who was in the Boomer mascot costume, but I cannot confirm whether Rosie was the one visiting Boston Cannon's practice this afternoon up there at Harvard. His backdrop does look the same for you listeners, so it could be all a ploy, and he could be on a very convincing green screen right now, but for all I know, Rosie is Boomer.
I will say we have never been in the same room together. So let the conspiracy theories begin.
Rosie, we've got a little bit of a playoff scenario spiel to get through. First and foremost, to get all the listeners on the same page. Usually I'm purposing the podcast format outline to fit my power rankings needs, as both usually come out on Wednesdays. This week, as you're listening to this on a Friday lovely morning or afternoon commute, getting ready for your PLL action, hopefully this can help you with your PLL preview for the final weekend of regular season action. Like I said, three teams have secured their spots in Minnesota. One has secured their spot to not be in Minnesota, of course, with Denver Outlaws winning an absolutely thrilling overtime game, which we'll touch on later in this podcast, against the New York Atlas after dropping their first homecoming game. Two teams, the New York Atlas and Carolina Chaos, will be fighting another day after this weekend, of course. And now it comes to this. It's the California Redwoods. Interestingly enough, if you told me at the beginning of the season that they would have the highest probability to make the postseason out of the other five teams, I would have called you crazy. But this is a young and hungry, and as I wrote in the power rankings, very interesting crew that has a 83.8% per the hardworking PLL stats team winning in for the Woods. And now they can also hope someone else loses, per se. But the message is simple. That was the message last week. Let's do it the hard way. Let's win the game. And you know what? That's exactly what they did. They took their first lead at the most important time. And Dylan Malloy with AK-47's Anthony Kelly's 2014 All-Star Game cleats in all, with about 40 seconds left on the clock, fifth goal, does it.
I'll go through these a little faster here, but they could also clinch with Utah losses. The ramble concluding here. The Water Dogs can also win it in a playoff scenario. They're at 81.4%. They could also get in if the Cannons lose both their homecoming games. Not unheard of this year, Rosie. Or if the Whipsnakes lose. A lot of possibilities for Boston. That's why it's a... Or for the Philadelphia. And that's why it's a north of 80% chance of making the playoffs. For Boston, if they win both their home games, and if... or if Philly loses and they have a higher score differential than Philly, it's a 79.7%. That's a pretty darn good chance we'll be seeing Boston in the playoffs, all right? Pretty darn good chance. Like I mentioned, the two title finalists from last season are dead in the water. We'll be talking about that. Whipsnakes with a 38.9% chance in this super ultra competitive Eastern Conference, like we've labeled it all season. They need to win. They need a Cannons or a Water Dogs loss. They can't afford one of those teams getting, or they can't afford both those teams getting the five wins, because guess what? Whipsnakes do not play two games. They have three wins. They can only get to four wins. I am good at math.
Utah
can win, but they need some help. They're going to be rooting quite heavily for the Cannons on Friday night, as they have a 16.2% chance of making the playoffs, because they need to make up some good score difference heading into Boston weekend. Heavy underdogs, back-to-back champs. They've got a minus 14 score difference. California has minus 5. Rosie, that was a long spiel to get through. But that is your playoff scenarios. What do you make of it all?
The thing that I find most interesting, well, two things. So let me say this as far as the Eastern Conference goes. Everything is still a possibility. Various degrees, of course. You know, you laid them out right there, percentage chances, this and that. But there's a possibility that, who knows, maybe the Cannons could end up being the first overall team. Will they? Probably not. It would be a remarkable feat of winning both of their games and New York losing, and a whole lot of score differentials just swinging in a gargantuan fashion, but it is possible. So we'll have to see. Like, there's not a lot you can officially rule out or completely take off the board as far as that Eastern Conference goes. We have seen, I feel like that Maryland-Carolina game we saw is kind of indicative that sometimes things can get out of hand, right? And, you know, like sometimes if a team starts sliding, the slide just keeps going for a while. Are we going to see a 20 goal game by a team? Probably not. You know,
yeah, I would push back against that, because it's different when it's what, before week five. Like, when it's earlier in the season, I think it's easier to slide off like that scoreboard wise. When you know these percentages, you know there's one game left in your season, or else you might not play again. It's a little tougher to let the game get away from you, which would, to your point, make it all the more impressive for A, the Cannons to secure a semifinal berth after this weekend, and B, if Utah can win and make up that score difference, that's going to be crazy, which is why the schedule worked out so nicely for the order of games in which they are.
Yeah, there is a way that has kind of fortunately played out that every single game this weekend can continue to be interesting. You know, we'll see if it ends up happening, but the way that it's laid out, there's not a automatic game that inherently is useless to watch, or that we're all kind of checked out on by the time it comes out around on the schedule. So that's something to look forward to there. Shout out Carolina. That's the Western Conference thing I want to say. I'm not going to say that it's... So here's the thing. Is it totally shocking? I think the way that they started their season, they had a whole lot of questions on the offensive side, right? You know, who's going to do the scoring? Who's going to do the leading? Who's going to do... Are they going to have a quarterback? Whatever the case may be. But I think they had something going for them that nobody else had, and that was bringing in Spencer Ford. And I think if you have maybe somebody else in place trying to grab that wheel as the whole bus is flying out of control, maybe Carolina ends up looking a little bit different. But you can point to a lot of both in-season and draft moves, like bringing in Hiltz, bringing in Adam Shanahan-Beatty's, things like that, that have ended up working out quite well for them. And look at him. You got a 5-1 team right now. And, you know, that's not something that Carolina has often done in the past. So, yeah, shout out to them, Chaos.
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to shout out Roy Colsey. This guy is a born winner. We saw with the Philly Barrage back in the day, and we're seeing it now as a head coach. Some teams, you face that adversity like they faced in Baltimore, and you know what? Let's fold up the season. Let's look ahead to getting to that number one pick in 2026. Not this group. Colsey rallied them together, and when you have leaders like Jack Rowlett, like Mark Lissini, like Troy Ray, friend of the podcast, like Blaze Reardon, all-world goalie, it's, I think, not easier to rally the troops, but to your point, like, I tweeted this out right as the final whistle sounded, like, this is the third time that they've won 5 games in the season, and they've had some pretty darn good offenses that, you know, were underwhelming for parts of the season when they had to, you know, transition from the box to back to the field game. So to see this group continue to gel and continue to form that chemistry, and they're the Outlaws kryptonite. 2 wins over the classiest, star-studded team in the league is nothing to undermine. And you know what? Like, I was kind of in disbelief the later stages of that game. Ray Dearth and Owen Hiltz kind of playing a hokey-pokey two-man game, and Hiltz slips under, gets that open look, 12-10, dagger. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is actually a Carolina win. Very much tip of the cap to the Carolina Chaos. Well done. Well done. Can we pencil them in for the semifinals? Like, over a Utah group that would be like fumbling in against all odds against a California group that is ahead of schedule. And then it'd be like, third time's a charm. Like, are we going to really expect them to beat the Denver Outlaws 3 times in a row? Am I getting too far ahead of myself? Yes, Rosie, I am. But these are questions that are spinning in my head.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. You know, it's like, it's really weird how this goes, right? You beat a team once, and then the second time you face them, we say, well, they beat them once. You know, they can certainly do it again. But
and
then,
to qualify the once was there's pre Jared Bernhardt Outlaws, and then there's post Jared Bernhardt Outlaws.
Right. But just more in the whole speaking, if you have two teams going against each other, you know, the fact that they have beaten, you know, that team A has beaten team B once makes you think that they can do it again. But when you get to that third time, for some reason, what beating a team 3 times seems like more difficult than beating them twice. All of a sudden, you kind of get like, you know, oh, I don't know. They've done it twice already. Can they somehow do it another time? But like, if I was in a foot race against you and I beat you the first time, then you'd probably think, well, yeah, of course you're going to beat me a second time. You know, I ran faster than you. But the third time we raced, you wouldn't be like, well, I don't know. Probably not this time. But for some reason, when it comes down to sports like this, you know, like group activities, team versus team, the third time, it almost feels more difficult to pull off a third win.
100%. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting end to the regular season. I mentioned that the schedule works out quite nicely with California and Boston starting things off. I think all four games are worth some level of in-depth preview by us too. And we will have a surprise guest coming up in about 15 or so minutes, Rosie. So we'll circle back to this first game, but I do want to hit on it just a little bit, and then we'll hit the Chaos and Archers next, which will be the nightcap for Friday night. Rosie, Redwoods versus Boston. Now this is a game coming off two straight wins for California. They're feeling good about themselves, peaking at the right time, but it's also like, wait, did we peak too early? Is this maybe, can we let our foot off the gas a little bit? We're pretty much a shoe-in for close to 84% likely to make the playoffs anyways against the Boston group that also is coming off a much needed win, but is very much more needing this win, if that right. makes sense, before they take on the Whips on Saturday night. So, Rosie, what do you think of me sizing the game up as such?
I think the Redwoods are going to come into this game, despite their wins, kind of hungry to, you know, sort of prove that, you know, it's not just a couple of flukes they've put together. You know, I think Anthony Kelly's message is generally going to be, you know, fight your way in, and then when you get there, you know, take everybody else down. You know, I feel like an Anthony Kelly led team is going to be one that is never kind of coasting, you know, him being the fuel in that engine. I think he's going to keep them going, you know, having the sense that, you know, even when they get in, I think it's going to be, you know, oh, 3 weeks ago, everybody had us dead to rights. You know, I feel like that card is going to get pulled if they make it in, you know, so, you know, show everybody what we can do, so on and so forth. And I think it's going to work. I think they will be very fired up, and I think they will step up and answer the call that he lays out there for them.
Sounds like they're the new Chaos, if they're just going to keep throwing that in our face. But yeah, for like I said, Boston really needs to come out firing as well. Your boy Boomer included. We saw the Boston faithful come out in full support last season. This year, it sets up nicely to a good parallel of, while they're not raising any banners, it's ending their regular season. And to me, it's quite similar to the way the Archers came into their homecoming 4-4 and needing two wins. All of a sudden, they're the number one team in the West. We mentioned Boston getting an outside chance if the Atlas dropped their game against the Water Dogs the next day. So, yeah, they're going to come out with urgency, and you can never really count out the Redwoods, so I do expect Boston to maybe start better, but man, this is going to be a fun one down the stretch. Rosie, we'll come back to this one, but Carolina Chaos versus the Utah Archers, ESPN2 at 9 p.m. This is an interesting one because the Archers have about a 16% chance per the odds. And in my mind, they have a -3% chance and they are not dressing a faceoff guy. Their offense has struggled all year. That puts even more pressure on this offense to be as efficient as possible. What do you make of that move? What do you make of Patrick Gresh reuniting with his father, Tony? What do you, and he, first game right back against Carolina, like, what are you looking forward to in this one?
Well, you know, I thought we were done with the zero face-off specialist strategy. You know, it got rolled out a bit more last season. I don't think we'd seen it at all this year, right?
Right.
I thought we had kind of evolved past that. So I was definitely surprised to see it. But, you know, the way I see it, I guess they were kind of like, you know, so they reach out and add Patrick Gresh, which, you know, if you can do it, it's a great idea to do it. You know, obviously he's a talented player, so I don't want to say it's like they're punting or anything like that on the season. But, you know, he does get this game, at least one game to play with his dad. We will see what their futures hold, what the Archers' futures hold or whatever, but whatever takes place between now and, you know, next season when things get kicked off, they do get at least one game together, and that's pretty awesome for the both of them and for Resch fans all around the world who finally get to see that. You know, been calling for it forever. I know they've been trying to make it happen, but, you know, he's an in-demand defensive midfielder who's been playing with a very tight-knit group in Carolina. And, you know, it was he kind of liked doing his thing. So it wasn't it was just a situation where it hadn't really worked out. Face-off-wise, they hadn't been getting much of anything, you know? I mean, it is good to have a face-off guy we've seen often, but we've often seen, you know, some guys arguing that it's not as great an advantage as, you know, the simple kind of, quote, common sense might dictate. They brought, you know, Sisselberg goes down with an injury. They bring in Naso. He's 33% in his games. So I feel like they were probably like, you know what, if we're going to try it, now is a mighty good time to try it. And we'll get Patrick Gresh in the lineup as well. So I also don't think that was going to be the big swing either way. You know, if they win or lose this game, I don't think it's going to be based on their face-off play or lack thereof. So I think they could afford to try it. And I don't think it means, you know, they're inherently punting. I mean, you got to switch something up anyway if you're in this spot. So we'll see if they can actually maybe turn this into a positive.
Yeah, if you're a team that's facing off about 33%, then you're more likely to try something like this. For the amount that we haven't seen no face-off guys suiting up in 2025, I don't know about you, Rosie, but I would have liked to see more tactical strategy around, like, forcing teams back, or, like, we sometimes last year we would see a team, like, win a face-off and throw it into their own, like, defensive zone or something, and
yep,
give it right back to the team, and they would have the 32-second... It'll be interesting to see what kind of stuff Brian Cavanaugh, Tony Resch, Chris Bates conjure up for this group, because this is a game where you empty the notebook, empty the game plan strategy-wise, and try to sneak in any way possible, because you not only need to win this game, but you need to win it by a good margin. And this offense hasn't been good, and you need Mason Woodward to, like, hit two early two-pointers or something. You need Sam King to win his matchup against a very good Jack Rowlett, who's been battling some vertigo. He told me not any concussion or anything, so he expects to be a full go, but that'll be a fun matchup. And the rest of Utah's offense, like, you're missing MVP Tom Schreiber, Matt Moore, of course, and Grant Ament is back in the midfield, so that's a plus. Rosie, any areas you would like to see the back-to-back champs exploit the win by 5 or 6 in this game?
I mean, so here's why that's particularly tricky. They have not, this strikes me just remarkable. There's not a game this season they've scored more than a dozen goals. You know, like they don't have like this one game where it was like, oh man, everything kind of worked out well. You know, we got hot and dropped 16 or 17 or something like that. 12 has been the limit. So, you know, partially decimated roster. It has not produced more than 12, but they're going to have to win by at least, you know, like you were saying, 6 or 7 or something like that. It is a very uphill climb. I'll say that they're basically going to have to do pull off some magic, I think, right? Like do some stuff that we did not expect that offense to produce. And maybe some of it will be coming from guys like, you know, defensive midfielders and, you know, kind of just, hey, if you can get it across the line, just keep going, right? Like take it to the rack because this is kind of that game for that, right? You know, they're probably out, got nothing to lose. If you, you know, if you think you got a shot, go try to make something happen because, you know, the guys we saw doing it last year or the year before haven't really been producing like we've seen. So, you know, there's really no reason to defer to somebody else right now. If you feel good, go get yourself a shot.
This is a defense that held famously the Chaos to 1 goal in the semifinals, margin of victory of 9. This is an Archers group that has already played the Chaos, looking for that score. 12-11, all right? So this season, a little closer, all right? You can't afford a 1-goal game this one. You got to win by, like, 6 or 7, like I said. Let's get funky, man. Let's get some, like, double screens for Mac O'Keefe out of the box shooting from, like, 30 yards out. Let's get, like, people lying in front of the crease in front of Blaze Reardon to screen him and let him not see the ball when O'Keefe is just pulling up from God knows where. This is the game we need to see some funky stuff.
Yeah, everybody lining up in circles, spinning around towards the goal, like a multi-level hidden ball trick kind of plays.
This is where you make your money if in the sub game, Brian Kavanaugh. I'm calling you out. You need to create some good magic for your squad, and we'll be watching. So that'll set some things up for Saturday's action, 1 p.m. on ABC. Another must-watch Eastern Conference tilt between Philadelphia and New York. This is a Water Dogs crew who is sending Jake Taylor to the reserve roster. CJ Kirst is playing attack again. Can we see a Cornell on Cornell crime matchup with Gavin Adler on the Atlas? And this is an Atlas crew who was not very satisfied with the way that game ended last time out, scoring 9 in the first half against Denver, scoring 3 in the second half, one of them being a vintage Schellenberger goal with 15 seconds left to send it into overtime, which we were like, MVP moment? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Jaron Bernhardt says not so fast. A lot of star power in this one. It was kind of like, I remember this being a, well, I thought it was in Villanova that they played, but it was actually the first game in Baltimore. And it was a resounding Atlas 17-9 win, Rosie. How much do you think that impacts things, and how much do you expect the Water Dogs to bounce back?
Well, I feel like we're going to see a little bit of a different Water Dog squad just based entirely on what we saw from them against Boston. You know, I feel like see situation with CJ Kirst where they kind of say, not like he's really, you know, throwing anybody off guard, you know, like Bill Trinity wasn't like, you know, whoa, where'd this kid come from? He's mighty good, right? You know, he didn't shock the world there, but I feel like everybody has kind of waited for him to get up to speed, if you will, or whatever, get his legs under him, whatever you want to say, find his groove, whatever. I think, you know, dropping 5 goals sort of gives you the inclination that, okay, you know, maybe he is finding his groove, and you just kind of hope that it isn't a one-off, and maybe this is closer to the norm than his, you know, first or second games.
Yes, finding his groove, but it's also like, yeah, he's finally healthy, maybe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he did have, I think, a fractured, broken wrist he was playing with in the national championship, so... you know, that's not, it can't be easy to shoot with as to someone who broke his wrist, a couple years ago, and who is mightily worse than Zeta first. It was, impossible for me to do anything, close to that, but, yeah, keep going.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how this carries over. And how much of that kind of performance rolls over to this one. And that being said, you know, they did still, of course, lose that game. So it's going to have to be more than just a CJ Kirst kind of show. And something I'm curious about, do you think, what are the chances here that the MVP comes from this game? Let's start with that. Is the MVP playing in this game?
So you're referring to the battle between Michael Sowers, of course, who racked up all his points in the first 3 or 4 weeks, or reigning MVP Jeff Teat on the other side, or his teammate who leads the league in scoring, Connor Schellenberger. Would I give it to a non-outlaw if both these teams... It'd be hard to, like, if Atlas loses this game, and they're also 6-4, and Philadelphia, what, becomes 5-5, it'd be hard to not give it to O'Neal or Pat Cavanaugh. Now, that being said, it would have to be in the 7-8, 9-point game range for Schellenberger, Sowers to separate themselves from it.
Right. I feel like almost all of the awards this year are going to be pretty much a nightmare to vote for. I think there's going to be a lot of really widespread, you know, decisions and arguments, and very, very few categories. Well, where it's just going to be like, well, of course this guy, and then everybody being nods and just agrees with it. I mean, everything from MVP, Rookie of the Year, face-off guy. I mean, it's just all going to be very widely debated. So hope y'all like debates.
Yeah, next podcast should be fun. I will be coming across the virtual laptop sphere to strangle you with your takes. And I do think 2 rope unit awards have all but been decided with... I don't know if we should give away our votes necessarily, but it'd be hard to give it to anyone besides... a couple guys on the Outlaws. I'll leave it at that.
Jeez.
And you've mentioned Tim Sudan's GM stuff, coaching wise. It'll be interesting. Of course, all of the other races we will talk about in our annual season superlatives next pod. Rosie, the next game is either going to be very anticlimactic, or it's going to be a very enticing final spot of the Eastern Conference. That is Maryland Whippersnakes versus the Boston Cannons on ESPN+ at 7 p.m. on Saturday, August 9th, Harvard Stadium. You know, the Boston Faithful is going to show out. They did last year, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast. The Whip Snakes, 3-6, losing the Rob Pinnell Bowl to the Redwoods at the Death. This time, right after I'm praising the defense for leading the league in scores against per game, it's them who kind of let the team down, letting in 14 against California. They're going to need to be much better against Boston. And Rosie, what do you expect out of this group? It was interesting to see Levi Anderson named an attackman in the roster tweet. We'll see if that's just shadow, if that's just like a little missed.
Little shell game, throw you off.
Smoke in the mirror is the phrase I was thinking.
All right. I mean, so the thing that jumped out to me, like immediately thinking about this matchup, is when you watched the Redwoods last weekend against Maryland, big pick plays up top, getting the matchups on the short sticks that they wanted, right? You know, like a lot of stuff to get, you know, be it Kavanaugh or Malloy, get them open and start picking on the shorties. And Jim Stagnita kind of mentioned that later. He was like, you know, we knew we were supposed to address that. We were supposed to, you know, we knew they were going to do it. We just didn't, you know, attack it in time. We, you know, they were aware of the problems. They were aware that it was going to happen, and they just couldn't stop it. Now, when I think about that Boston win against the Water Dogs, the first play I think of is when you had the killer combination of Will Manny and Coulter Mackesy running two-man games on that far side. Are they going to start bringing their, you know, their now signature two-man game? And can Maryland address the problem now? Because, you know, they were aware of it before, and last time it crushed them. Will it crush them again? Because I certainly think it's something that, you know, Boston's going to look to attack. Because, you know, why wouldn't you if they haven't stopped it yet?
You know, I was a big fan of Christian Mazur coming out of Army. I still think he is a really good defensive midfielder. Just that game-winning play from Dylan Malloy, to your point. Maybe not the high screen that you're talking about, but it's coming off the wing. Malloy going as fast as he can, and Dunn just completely gets clipped off, and you have to switch. It's like, oh, did you not communicate to get under or something? And did you not tell him the screen was even coming? Like, it totally looked like he got blindsided. And of course, we know how that ended for Malloy to win the game with 40 seconds left. Rosie, you were there. You were covering this game. It was a 7 p.m. game at Homewood. Boston Cannons beating Maryland 13-12. What do you remember of this game way back when on Saturday, June 21st?
Couple things. I remember Matt Dunn's defensive efforts. That's one of the things that jumps out first, because, like, if you look at the score sheet from it, I don't even think his name is on it, because it was one of those performances.
That's a classic Matt Dunn. So selfish of him not to let us call out his calls turnovers.
He is just one of those guys. He's like, you know how you have an elite cornerback, and if you look at, like, his stats, there's just nothing there because, you know, nobody messed with him.
Now, Asher Nolting did toss 5 assists in this game, 3 turnovers.
Yes. If I'm not mistaken, was Dunn covering Holman?
He may well have been. Maybe it was an Ajax on Asher?
I want to say
Muller on Coulter.
I don't have to double check my notes, but I feel like he might have been on Holman there. Who had himself a goose egg night. But I'll also say I remember, of course, Rob Pinnell dishing out assists, including the big record-breaking one against, passing Mr. Ryan Boyle there.
And, all right, yeah.
And the team looked very sharp. That was, that was kind of an offensive performance. Granted, they put up 12 and lost the game, but their attack was really kind of firing on all cylinders there. You know, Matt Brando had 4 goals there, and that was one of them. It's funny, it's kind of similar to Boston's first homecoming game last year for them. They lost the game, and they had this whole kind of discussion about, we felt like we should have done more for these fans. These fans really showed out, and we didn't quite bring it enough to them. It was almost kind of, maybe a little bit nerve-wracking, just how energetic, how much on top of us they were, and we kind of dropped the ball there. I think Maryland kind of approached it from the same way. Like, they had this game going, and then they fell behind and eventually started rattling off some goals late in the game. It was a little bit too little too late there. Mm-hmm. They still lost by 1, but I think it was a situation when you lose that first game of your homecoming, you lose it, but you can lose it in a fashion where you're still feeling okay about your team and okay about where you're going from there.
Right.
So I think
right.
That's what they took away from the loss in that one.
Especially when you hang up 20 goals the next evening. So Rosie, I guess from a neutral point of view, you kind of want the Cannons to drop that first game against the Redwoods, to set up a must winning in against the Whipsnakes. And you kind of want in that case, it wouldn't necessarily matter as much if the Water Dogs pull it off against Atlas. But that would also make it much more interesting. Like we said, it'd be more interesting if the Water Dogs beat the Atlas for the Cannons already winning that first game, because then they would have that chance at the one seed. So a lot of different scenarios spinning in our heads, Rosie. So anything else you're looking for in the weekend in total?
Well, I want to see Asher Nolting. He discussed it in their press conference after the last game. He had his first hat trick of the season. He said he just needs to shoot more. Hasn't been doing a lot of shooting this year. And I want to see if he can follow through on that this time around. He's got 2 games in front of his home crowd. See if he keeps up with the shooting. And, they've got a lot of stories being the homecoming team there. You got Will Manny back in the lineup, kind of back full-time duty. We'll see what happens when he's back on a Cannons ground again. And, two games. It's a very important and interesting dramatics-wise time for these guys to have 2 games. So, after kind of coming out of their tailspin there and winning the last one, maybe they can put something together here.
Bellerica Beast, Jeff Traynor, of course, back home. Boomer, we'll see him out in full force on the protected roster. You see John Gepper and McKelly providing some cover there. So it'll be interesting to see if McKelly cracks the lineup. I think it'd be a little harder for Gepper to crack it with Ethan Rawl and Owen Grant manning the LSM position there. But if you want to see a kind of different dynamic, then maybe the Mackesy Manny magic it wears off a tiny bit, get a downhill dodger like McKelly and see what you can do with it. But yeah, seeing Asher Nolting be more aggressive towards the goal just unlocks so much for this Cannons offense, and opens things up for a domino effect for guys like Matt Campbell, who's becoming more dominant every game, and maybe see some more Jules Henningberg inverts. A lot of different options we can see out of this crew.
One thing real quick, I'm taking a look at my notes from when they played last time, and it looks like So it looks like Asher was in a bunch of weird spots, coming out of the box on occasion and things like that. But also, I do have him going against Matt Dunn here a couple times. So, yeah, I know I stand corrected. Maybe Matt Dunn, you just need to, get your act together, young man.
Well, the stats always don't tell the full story. Those assists could have come up on power plays and in transition. It is interesting to hear you say you notice him coming out of the box a little bit. That's something we don't really see Asher do too often for this Cannons offense. But when they were trying to figure out how to work McAzee into things, it kind of tracks. So, yeah, this will be a Boston weekend to remember for teams. Three teams in each conference, rather. 16 playoffs. Rosie, any quarterfinals, if you called that first round matchups, that you most want to see?
Oh, man.
Carolina versus California is far more likely than the Carolina-Utah matchup. And then I would say at this point, Boston-New York is a little more likely. No, Boston-Philly is more likely than the alternatives.
All right, so let's roll with the likely outcomes there. Boston-Philly, I am up for as many Boston-Philly games as they want to trot out. I'm not saying every team should hate the team they're going against, right? Like, it's not natural to hate everybody the same amount. Same way it's not natural to like everybody the same amount, right? Like, these things just vary. But when the opportunity is legitimately there, you do have to appreciate a beef that has festered and reappeared year after year after year. And, you know, we saw it, you know, I mean, you want to go back, what, championship series? Basically, any time these guys
won. It reared its ugly head at the championship series. Annie Copeland's last game in charge. Michael Sowers takes that huge cross check to the head. And every game since, you see Sowers go off against this Boston defense. Went for 3-1 last weekend in that loss, 13-10. So, having played in week 10 and be so close to kind of that matchup would add another interesting dynamic. But yeah, man, it'd be
and they threw
how
some
could you refuse that matchup?
Yeah, you know, want to see what happens if Sowers tries, you know, drive into the crease again. Will Colin Kirst kind of hop out and go to try to pop him next time as well? And, you know, if that happens like it did last game, is somebody going back to give Colin some payback if he goes out of the crease? It is that matchup comes with some dramatics, and everybody is aware of it. Both teams are well aware that that's just the kind of game it's going to be when they face off. So, yeah, if we do it with some, in an elimination round, just, you know, ratchet up the tension and the incentives a little bit more, I am very much here for it.
Say Maryland is out of the playoff picture. RIP Stags in crew for your playoff run of all these years. Would we rather see New York versus Philly in a back-to-back weeks if Boston can pull off this 2-0 week, or you would want to see Boston-Philly no matter what?
I don't know. It's tough. It is tough to turn down a beef, I gotta say.
Yep, yep.
If I could see, it's tough to pass on the drama. I will admit it. I'm messy. I'm a messy individual. It's tough to say no to that.
So, challenge accepted. New York, Philly, give us some beef to get Rosie excited this weekend. Carolina, California, you know, I've been on my BS, talking my BS all summer long about these guys. And look what we have here. The playoff matchup with California and Carolina, potentially Utah would like a word. It's just a tremendous story of Right, like we talked about the adversity that the chaos overcame, doing all of what Owen Hiltz is doing offensively is just so fun to watch. And you look at this California group that just has endless like off-field feel-good stories with Dylan Malloy's resurgence and Chris Bocklet's recovery from that dramatic brain injury and Brian Tevlin's story off the field. Like, there's so many things about this team that like you want to root for. Friend of the podcast, Joshua Balcarcel, that it's like, can they, like, there's always just that back of your mind feeling like, can they really keep winning? But when you got Chris Kavanaugh in the second round and hungry as heck to keep proving people wrong, it's a sight to behold. And this is a pretty sick matchup. Like,
No, it is an awesome matchup. It is one that definitely gets you energized just thinking about it. Right, you have these two teams who essentially, you know, they kind of had to keep some of the frame around, right, some of the structure, but largely both rebuilt. Look just dramatically different from the past year.
The subheading I had them in my power rankings was in their tier would they got to do a lot to prove to us that they're not in rebuild mode.
Right. You know, you bring them in, you've got these GMs with these historic resumes, pair them up with these superstar MLL, you know, outstanding titans in their own right, Colsey and Kelly. Build their staffs that are kind of similar, right? You put some more superstars in their staffs. You get your, like a Kyle Sweeney, you mentioned Bocklet, like guys like that helping out as well. You just kind of load these teams up with superstars in the off-field positions. They both go out and get some very young superstars who, you know, huge in college. Still kind of anchored by some of the same guys from before. And then after all that, like you mentioned with California, and, you know, you get your Dylan Malloy's and Chris Kavanaugh and all those very exciting guys on that end, you still have Blaze in goal on the other end. And, you know, he can make up for a lot of stuff. So it's really, really exciting just that matchup to think about it. Can this kind of super energetic offense, you know, McAdory and Kavanaugh, who can just go flying all over the place. And then you got Ryder Garnsey in there contributing with his own sort of frenetic pace. And all of these guys, it's going to be, you know, pass, 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 pass. And you still have to get past Blaze. Like, no matter how much dancing and flipping the ball around you're doing and dodging and double teams you draw, you still got to beat Blaze Reardon. And I don't know if they're going to have an answer for it. Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. Everything always comes down to Blaze and the defense. So this might not be any different. Or maybe Owen Hiltz drops 7. Maybe this will be different. I don't know.
No, absolutely. And let me phrase it. Let me frame this matchup, potential matchup, one more way. And then I want to get your thoughts on the Whips and Archers, and then we'll wrap with the Outlaws, and we'll get you out of here. The reason this is potentially more exciting is, like, the Chaos typically coming into the playoffs have usually been a lower seed, famously 2.8%ers, and famously are coming up against a team with high expectations. Last year was Boston, and the reason why I don't really look forward to watching the Chaos in the playoff games is sometimes these games just become like really slow, grinded out duds, or if you're a defensive lover, really fun. But for me, it's like, okay, I want to see some more goals here. Now you can probably project more goals against a team with nothing to lose, and plays a frenetic kind of style play like the Redwoods, right? So that's exciting. And yeah, that's just another way to frame it of like, what do you think about that with how usually we're looking at the Chaos, like no one wants to play these guys again. This defense is going to give this juggernaut a 4-goal output again versus this Redwoods group that has nothing to lose.
It's very funny. I think I don't know if I don't know what it will take for the Carolina Chaos to feel loved by everyone. I feel like we can say we like them, and I feel like, you know, we can heap praise upon them forever. But I think maybe it is just in their sort of fundamental nature from the days of old that they just reject the notion outright. So I feel like even if these two teams are matching up, they might both come to the table just with the belief that, you know, everyone has counted them both out and, you know, nobody believes in either of them. And no matter who wins the game, they will shove it in the faces of those who they feel really believing in them.
Oh, we're going to get it, Rosie. We are going to get it. In which case, we'll deserve it and we will take it. That's what the business is all about, making bad takes and making sure no one ever re-listens to old takes.
Burn the tapes right away.
That being said, these archers are not fully out of it. They are hungry to keep on playing. They're coming up against this Chaos squad to do the improbable, and we'll see if they can get it done. But if they are not, well, let me phrase it to you this way before I get to the big picture stuff. Which would you rather see in the postseason? The Archers limping across miraculously over score differential over California, or Maryland over what? If Maryland makes it as a 4-16, that would mean either Philly or Boston don't make it.
See, it would be incredibly fascinating to me if the Archers make it. And then, you know, because like, how long has it been since we were like, oh, might have something over here in Utah? You know, it hasn't really been a prevailing sentiment for much of this season. You know, it's always looked a little off, right? Like, it's always been like a warning light on your car for the entire drive. You know, something hasn't quite been going right. If they ended up getting in and putting on the performance of the year to do so, it would just be so fascinating. You know, I would be very upset if the next week or you know, the next game, they just kind of, you know, just kind of drop an egg and it's all for nothing. But it would be incredible to see them rally. And also, like, if this is their last hurrah, right? You got to look at the little, I guess, in terms of PLL history, it's effectively like this dynasty, right? Like, this is one of the most dominant dynasties we've ever seen. Can they maybe go out a little bit, you know, instead of, it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of like a movie, kind of like, you know, instead of just flat out getting destroyed in their final battle, you know, maybe they go out with the heroic slow motion death, you know? I mean, if they're still going out, you know, maybe they do something where you're like, man, that's the Archers we've known all these time. There was no quit in those guys.
The fact that they play after the Redwoods and they will know their benchmark really helps. I forgot to mention that. And you alluded to it, the big picture stuff of, listen, we're not saying the Archers are going to blow everything up and everyone's going to retire or anything. All we're saying is, look, this is the first time that both title finalists will not even be in the playoffs the following season, if that is indeed the case. what do you make of that and the, you know, the continuous new wave pushing out this old guard of sorts?
Yeah, I think it's really just a testament to how difficult it is. I think it's stranger, not that they would miss it, but that there's been so many to repeat. Just kind of the level of talent in the
league. Or at least go back to the next title game and lose.
Right, right. To get that shot to, you know, get deep in the playoffs and get deep to the championships and, you know, defend your belt. It's just remarkable based on, you know, how any team can win pretty much all the time. Just, you know, the fact that they have done it is just incredible. And, you know, it seems like these rookie classes are followed up by another rookie class where you're like, you know, oh man, I thought that was the best one. And then maybe this is the best one. And of course the trade-off for that is, you know, you're taking somebody's job, right? So the teams are just going to keep getting, you know, shaken up, and it's tough to kind of keep your foothold on your position because somebody else is coming along, or maybe you'll have to switch to another position or find another team. So, you know, it shouldn't be surprising if a team doesn't get back to the championship again, you know, after they were just there the previous year, because of, I think, how sort of thin the line is between total talent between these teams.
It is just an absolute, like, total peaceful transition of power. It's been really like, okay, I've had it. Let me make it the next year's game, and I'll hand the torch off to you, like, and we'll keep doing this year after year. It's an abrupt, violent transition this year, and I don't know about you, Rosie, but that energizes me for the playoffs, and that's like, all right, let's see some fresh blood in here, and let's see some guys that are hungry to get there first. Teat is hungry, man. Shelly is hungry. These Outlaws are a force. And I do want to end the podcast off with them because they were the first ones to get to 7 wins. Of course, they, as we touched on a little bit, lost for the second time against the Carolina Chaos. Bounced back in the shortest time any homecoming team has ever had. 11 a.m. Mountain Time the next morning to play the game of the year. Are you ready to confirm this, Rosie? Was that the game of the year? Over
That's what I'm hearing.
The other option would be 18-17, Cannons, Outlaws.
Ooh.
And of course, the first overtime game, I guess, last weekend or 2 weekends ago at this point, with the Chaos defeating the Water Dogs.
Right, right. I mean, man, I feel like it's tough to dethrone that 18-17 game.
Highlights-wise.
Yeah, yeah. The highlights-wise, and it being... it arriving earlier on the schedule and being in that ABC spot.
Some controversy.
Yeah, the shot, you know, Brennan O'Neill with that shot. I feel like just kind of, maybe just by virtue of it arriving earlier than this last game.
Yeah, a little less running out of gas. A lot of guys running on fumes in this one, which made that... Tarasenko diving goose to Jake Pussino all the more impressive. I compare it to the Bo Pettersson pick six of last year in terms of just plays that kind of encapsulate a potential title run if that happens for Denver. But Rosie, man, like a month off, you go from playing twice in less than what, 10 hours, you're playing back-to-back to now you're playing not until September 1st for the semifinals in Philadelphia. Well, are you putting all your house money on whoever Denver plays?
I mean, a month can't help, right? Like, obviously there is a benefit to some degree of rest. And I know they are getting together for, like, it's not all going to be just like, you know, Zoom calls and, you know, emails and text chains or whatever. Like, they are going to have a neutral site practice during the time, but still, there's no real substitute for actually playing and being in those live game situations. So sort of maintaining the focus and, you know, like just mentally and physically, a month seems like it is in no way helpful. So, I mean, it's going to have to be something they'll actually have to overcome. It's like a curse. They were too good. And now they're paying the consequences for it.
No, they were too good for their own good. Ooh, that is tough. Yeah, you do not want your last bye week to be in the last weekend of the regular season. I thought I would like seeing Brent O'Neill hobbling around, but then you watch RJ's fun vlog from the game, and it's like, oh, O'Neill's just saying that he's like cramping, and then he goes down the next possession and takes a shot. So that was just a testament to playing twice in 10 hours. Like, I was overreacting a little bit there, Rosie. So rest will definitely be helpful. I will be very sad to see them lay an egg in the semifinals. Okay. I would like to see an Atlas Outlaws rematch. I do not think we're going to get it.
You think they're just going to come out and drop like 6 goals and call it a day?
I think they might forget how to play lacrosse.
it is such a long time off. I don't know how they're going to do it. Like, that's going to be the story, right? Like, conquering that much time off is going to be their big trial and tribulation during the postseason, just sitting around.
Can we get a mini Placid, a mini Vale going to get these guys up and going? Yeah. Should we form a team and just get our butts kicked for a couple weekends in a row?
I mean, I'm up for it if they are. You know, we can head out to their practice and be like, you know, hey, if you guys don't want to go against yourselves this whole time, come get some.
That might actually make them worse. Let's backtrack that. We don't want to be held responsible. Our takes are bad enough, Rosie. I did want to ask you if you have ever experienced anything like Dylan Malloy this past weekend in terms of wearing 11-year-old cleats. Has there been any sort of magic equipment you've dusted off the shelf and helped you ball out?
Well, yes, because most of my stuff is Dylan Malloy era old. Partially superstitious, partially because if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Why would it?
Yeah, no, I am of the Malloy school there. My cleats are like Dylan Malloy's cleats. Yeah, I mean, they've got at least a decade on them as well. So I'm right with them. I don't run with the kind of force that causes them to explode. I don't have to worry about that ever taking place. But yeah, no, I am all on board with that. Super old cleats, super old equipment. Relatively new stick. Got a new stick recently. So I'll probably use that one for about 10 or 15 years or something like that. But yeah, no, I'm one of those guys. So yeah, I'm right there with them. Are you a like new gear guy? Like,
no, I've never been a real gear guy. I'm closer to you, but I would appreciate not being in super rusty old stuff when I do go out there in the occasional men's league game and get my ass kicked. But yeah, no, it's you know, you pick some things up around the IL office, and next time you come around Baltimore, we'll have to get you some swag going. But there's not much left of it, and hopefully we can, you know, get a sponsor us, PLR Happy Hour Podcast. Like, let's get some more gear in Rosie's hands. Especially maybe it's the exact pair of cleats from 2014 that if they want to sponsor us, great. That'd be fantastic.
Exactly. I'm not saying no. You, let us know. We will ad read anything y'all want us to ad read.
And we will love it, just as you listeners loved listening to this entire episode. If you liked it, leave a review, share with a friend, and let us know. You know, we like hearing from you guys. So make sure to follow us on all of our game coverage on InsideLacrosse.com throughout the weekend. It's the last weekend of the regular season, Rosie. Let's get it. Let's get after it. And playoffs are near. We'll have a week off. TBD if we do season superlatives next week or the week after. But August 23rd, first round, quarterfinals, two games in Minneapolis. Not to overlook an exciting game weekend in Boston, Massachusetts. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch up with you soon.